This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log into audiblepodcast.com/cast for details.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 14. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I am Scott Johnson.
And we are kicking off a new triplet. Well, we only do three in a row with guests when we should be doing four because it's called Forecast.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's just one of those weird things. But anyway, it's a new series of episodes with some great guests. Joining us is Dan Trachtenberg, host of the Totally Rad Show and director of commercials, among many other things. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really excited to making horrible predictions.
The pleasure is ours. I can't. Well, those are our favorites, so don't get too sad about that. Those are my favorites.
That's what the show is about. We've never been proven wrong yet. Still waiting for that day. Also joining us, Dave Broadbeck. Buzz Out Loud fans may know him as Dave the Psychologist. He is a psychology professor at Algoma University and a podcaster with lots of great podcasts like Tangential Conversion and Thunderbird 6. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks a lot, Tom and Scott. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. You also may know Dave if you're a listener of Tom and I's other show called Current Geek. You may have heard his biosphere story on a recent episode, which was epic and awesome.
Yes.
And when I found out you were the same guy, that was made even cooler. So not only are you a PhD, but dude, you're a nerd. And making your own biosphere is about the nerdiest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah, well, you know, a graduate school typically rips all the creativity out of you, so you got to do something to keep it going.
To keep it balanced.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we do take emails from listeners as well. Send us your predictions. Email us forecastpodcast@gmail.com, or you can post them up at our blog, forecastpodcast.com. Got one here from Alex, who wanted to chip in some predictions because his specialty is coffee. So he's making a short-term prediction about coffee. Now, he actually sent us a whole email with, like, short, long, and crazy-ass predictions about coffee. But since we're doing the short-term episode, here is his short-term prediction. He says decaffeination will change. At the moment, beans are essentially washed of the caffeine with CO2-infused water. It's carbonated water, right? With the upcoming water problems, there are going to have to be changes, and the specialty industry is quite progressive, so I think we'll see a specifically grown varietal that doesn't create caffeine and therefore doesn't need to be processed to be caffeine-free. The alternative is polymer stirrers that bind to caffeine and can decaffeinate coffee after being brewed.
I don't like the polymer bit. That sounds horrible. That sounds like some kind of chemical thing to me. That doesn't sound good.
I hope you can grow it. That'd be better. Doesn't change the taste, and the varietal sounds the best for that because it's just grown to be coffee, and you treat it like coffee, and you're not washing it with chemicals, which is what happens now, and you're not adding chemicals to your coffee cup later on, like the polymer thing. But really, just drink real coffee.
Exactly.
Yeah, the beans, baby. It's all in the beans.
I do drink decaf a lot, though, because I'm trying to cut down. But you know what? I always feel like I'm cheating.
Nice.
All right, let's move on to our short-term predictions. These are predictions of what we think will happen in the next few years. Could be in your area of expertise. Could be sci-fi stuff you see in the pipeline. These are the more practical of the predictions that we will be doing. Let's start off with Dave the Psychologist. Are you going to stick in your area of expertise, Dave, or are you going to branch out to hockey?
Yeah, the branch out to hockey. No, I branch out there and say Toronto still will not have won a Stanley Cup in the next 50 years.
Okay, on to Dan.
That's pretty safe. I'm going to actually talk a little bit about something that's – I'm also sort of a zoologist, biologist as well.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah, I teach biology courses as well. And one of the things that's really occurred to me in the last 10 or 12 years, ever since Dolly the cloned sheep, is that what's going to happen within the next – I will say 20 years, 20, 25 years, okay, is that human cloning will become a viable reproductive choice that will be no different for people than having a test tube baby.
No kidding. Oh, wow.
Okay, well, I've heard this. I mean, we haven't heard it actually specifically on the show. You're the first one to bring up the cloning actually as a viable option for reproduction. My question to you is, how do we get past the myriad of sort of social mores and weird sort of reactions and freakouts that people have about this idea of cloning and the ultra religious will you know fight this to their dying breath. How do you see any of those obstacles being overcome? And if you do, how?
Well, I mean, the same thing happened. You think about it back to about 78 or so when the first test tube baby, the first IVF baby was born. I think her name was Lisa Brown in Britain. And it was like, you know, an abomination. This is horrible. Oh, my God. Yada, yada, yada. And church people, bioethicist types were going on and on about it. And now I'm sure we all know someone who either was an IVF baby or who we know a couple who has had IVF kids. It's not a big deal anymore. It's just going to be basically, as I said, something that at the time seemed science fiction-y. And we, within 5 years, just accepted it. I can think of at least two kids I know whose parents, you know, couldn't conceive. So they, you know, went off with some magazines and they end up, that's how it works. And then they end up, you know, making a baby. And it's really no big deal anymore. It's something that is not... I mean, there are people that don't like it, but it's a very small percentage of the population. They're not very vociferous anymore. And it really was like that. I mean, I was only in grade 7 or grade 8, but I remember this whole thing partially because the little girl's name was Lisa Brown, and I had a crush on a girl named Lisa Brown. And I really honestly think that this is just going to be no big deal. And
So would you clone Lisa Brown?
Not now, no.
No.
Oh, dude, that is so meta. Over. Yeah, that's crazy. Dude.
So how do you see it, Dave? How do you see it playing out? Like, are we going to be cloning cells to make a baby, or are we going to be people like grown adults, or we grow them, or we go to? How's that going to work for you?
I think what'll happen will be you'll either take an egg from the mother, or just you'll be able to get an egg without any genetic material in it, and then you'll take genetic material from one of the parents. And you'll put it in there, and I mean, this is basically in a very broad way how cloning is done right now. And they'll put the egg, they'll implant the egg after a little while in the mother, and she'll have a baby. It'll be a clone of the husband or the wife, the father or the mother. It'll also, I think, be an option for women who just want to have a kid. And there's a lot of women that right now what they do is they adopt a kid or they go the sperm bank route, things like that. And I think this will be a new way to go. Which will just be, you know, like I said, at first it'll be odd, but you won't be able to tell the difference between those kids and other kids because they'll just seem like little babies. And unless you have a picture of the, you know, mother at the same age, you won't say, oh my God, they look exactly the same. But I mean, how often do we say that right now?
Well, that's a good point. So it only gets weird when the baby hits 30 and people remember what the mom looked like at 30 and that's yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the differences, right, is it's a single genetic donor rather than combination. Yeah. Is that right?
Well, that's what I would – I mean, I think eventually you might end up, you know, pairing up chromosomes. That's a lot more complicated. And that's where you could actually get this sort of selective thing where you're saying, okay, I want – now, as soon as we know what all the genes do, like how I just said that, once we know what all the genes do.
Yeah, that's all.
but if you do know, like, for example, that we want this colored eyes and one parent has – brown eyes and one parent has blue eyes, you could just pick a little B genome and you got it, right?
So it's one from column A, one from column B.
Exactly. Now, I don't think that'll happen for a long time. And I think that will be a lot more pushback there because that's more your designer kids. I think when you make, in essence, using what they call in biology, parthenogenesis, right? Making clones of the mother, or I guess it could be the father, as I said, I just don't think it's going to be that big a deal. I mean, you also got to realize there's so many environmental effects, you know, in utero effects and also effects as the kid grows up that there's no guarantee the kid's going to act or even look exactly like one of the parents.
But is there a slope to slip on here? And I just throw this out for conversation's sake, but let's say you've got a situation, let's say I've got a laser. And this laser I just built is really good at digging up weeds. And I take it out in my yard and I dig weeds with this big laser I made. But it turns out it was such an amazing jump forward in laser technology. But it's only another tiny step away from that to a laser that, you know, murders people or, you know, destroys worlds or whatever. My idea, my stupid metaphor is leading to this. if I'm jumped to this technology where I can now clone a human being, when it's a very small step to the designer kid thing where all right, I want to knock out anything that's cancerous. Let's get rid of that tendency toward, you know, pigeon-toedness or whatever.
Left-handedness.
Yeah, perfect eyesight, all these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That's where it starts to get a little goofball. How do you feel about that being accepted socially, even a few years after it's, you know?
I that's the part, in fact, that that to me actually disturbs me more. I have no real concern about cloning. I just honestly think it just doesn't bother me. But I think that the concern is when you start to get things like making those choices, because, I mean, genetic and it's not, I'm not talking about this on a moral level. That's a whole nother thing. Genetic interactions are so exceedingly complicated. You know, one gene turns on three, turns off four more, which produces a protein that turns on three others and turns off six more. Knocking out a single gene, unless it's something that we really, really are darn sure is going to only have one effect, I think that what's going to happen there is we could end up doing something bad. That's more my concern there, the designer kid thing. But I mean,
people unintended consequences. Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, but people talked about this when Lisa Brown was announced to the world, assuming her name was Lisa Brown. I think that's what it was. You know.
Or you just had such a powerful crush on that Lisa Brown girl.
Yeah, she was the first girl who would ever walk home with me. That's all I'm saying.
That's all it takes sometimes.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's all it ever took for me.
All right. So Dan, 3 o'clock high? No, sorry.
Nice.
Great movie.
Great movie.
I thought
you
were going to bring up The Sixth Day to complement the cloning conversation.
Another good example of that. In fact, one of the things I love about this show is we end up talking about a lot of stuff that's either inspired or even a lot of cases come to pass that were originally things that were found in film or TV. And
now it's real. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from Dan.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the leader and provider of spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like Forecast. Log into audiblepodcast.com/cast to get a free audiobook download of your choice. Like, for example, I'm a huge fan of Stephen King, but I'm even a bigger fan of his Dark Tower series. I recommend, if you haven't read that series, to go pick up book one, which is called The Gunslinger. One of my favorite books of all time and easily my favorite series of all time. You can get that free at audio or at audible.com. Again, that link to go to is audiblepodcast.com/cast and get that free audiobook download today.
And after we talk to Dan here in a second, you may need to get the audiobook Film Studies, The Pocket Essential Guide.
Oh, and that new George Lucas thing.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be awesome. But Dan, if we were to point to you and say, what are your short-term predictions next 10, 20, 30 years, what would they be?
Well, I too wanted to think about what was in my wheelhouse. And I'm sort of disappointed that I didn't come up with anything more clever, but it just so happens that the stuff that's going on in the movie industry right now really is future stuff. It really is the things that we've seen versions of in science fiction movies in the past are now coming to fruition, and I'm going to talk about 3D movies. Because it feels very obvious, and like I said, I wish it was a little bit more obscure and more of a clever idea that I had, but it really does seem like 3D movies are going to take over within the next maybe 10 years, between 10 and 20 years. And I think that, you know, a lot like there's just a different. We've had 3D movies for a while. We've had them in the 50s. We've had them when I was a kid and with Captain EO and Nightmare on Elm Street. Freddy's Dead was in 3D, or I think that was the one. And then this year we've had the My Bloody Valentine in 3D. And what's even more remarkable this year is that it would be rare for an animated film to not be released in 3D. And I'm talking about 3D. I'm not talking about like 3D movies like Toy Story's CG 3D. I'm talking about glasses 3D. And then we just had this huge historical event with Avatar. And that really cemented – I think Avatar is sort of the Gone with the Wind or Wizard of Oz. You know, those movies are remembered for being the first color films, but they were not. We had color before them, and or the iPod. You know, we had plenty of MP3 players before the iPod, but the iPod really made MP3s and MP3 players household name, or you know, just a sort of a commonplace. They became a part of our lives, and I think that Avatar is that first thing that we've got that sort of cemented our future in 3D dumb, and then you know all the stuff coming out at CES with a 3D camcorder. So kids are going to be making all their YouTube videos in 3D and 3D television, and you know I really think that. You know, maybe in 10 years, and I hope IMAX goes along with this. I hope that it's all 3D IMAX stuff, that we'll all have our own glasses that we bring to the movie. Just sort of like back in the day when you went to the theater, and even the movies. When you went to the movies in the 40s, 50s, you know, you got dressed up. It was an event that you went to. And slowly things have become more casual. And up until this year, we've heard a lot about how the decline – of theater ticket sales and with the rise of Blu-ray and HD television and home theater technology, there's less of and smaller windows between when a movie's out in theaters and when it comes out to rent. So there's less of this. There's sort of less of a reason to go to the theaters. But I think that what James Cameron just did with Avatar, and what I think is going to continue, is he found a cure for that. He found a reason for us to have to go see a movie in the theater. You cannot see it as it was intended in any other way but going to the movies. And I think that because of that, I think Hollywood will really embrace that and want to make it happen. It's different. You know, they didn't make tons of money on the gimmicks in the 50s with the 3D movies and all that stuff. Now it's really a whole new thing. And I want to bring up, too, that a lot of people, you know, I had a conversation, it's weird, with my brother and my father in the past month about how they were saying, oh, soon we'll get holograms. And I don't think that is what's going to happen. I think hologram and that kind of thing, that's for video games. I think if video games keep on moving the way they're moving, we will want to be inside the world. But a movie, I don't think will ever go that far. Even, you know, if we were doing the second episode with the longer term predictions, I think you know the movie needs the frame, and there's a hologram is pointless because it's. That's what 3D is. 3D
but doesn't
is a
that sound a little bit like what people said about color television or color movies, though? It's like, nobody needs that. The movies need shading and all that. I mean, isn't it just that we'll change? It'll be something new.
Well, that's my point with the 3D, is that's what people that are naysaying 3D right now sound like those people that didn't think we needed sound. They didn't think we needed sound back in
nobody
the day.
Nobody will go for the talkies.
Yeah. Yeah,
who wants to listen to those talkies? I don't want to hear people talk.
That was very real, though. Yeah. They really thought that.
Oh, for
that.
Sure, yeah.
Because the way people acted was so different, then it would have been weird to hear them talk, but then we adapted. But I think the hologram – I just want to address the contrary and say – because I think the hologram thing is different because art has not – we haven't left the frame. You know, even the cave paintings, there was a frame there. You know, there's paintings, comic books, illustrations – photography.
Theater,
yes, but that's the stage, you know.
Yeah,
there's
always that point of reference. You're right. There's always that framing of it.
Theater in the round.
Exactly. We need
dinner theater
because in medieval times.
I'm trying.
Because you need it. Film is still a visual. It's visual storytelling. You are being told a story. Video game is different. Video game is you are experiencing a story. So I could see it plausible that we may once be inside our games. We may have a holographic kind of situation in video games because we would be inside the world and the story isn't told to us. We experience it. But movies, I think we still need that frame. And like I said, 3D is the same thing as a hologram with a frame, you know.
Okay.
So.
Well, Dan, you're one of the guys on the internet that has a one of the more notable voices on film, and people respect what you say, and you have a lot of like interest in a lot of crazy stuff, and it's awesome. So I would say this: I saw Avatar in 3D day one because that was the way to see it.
Right.
And I said to myself, well, this is the first time since like maybe Star Wars that I cared to see a movie more than once in a theater. And again, that's part of the magic of this movie, is it drives you to want to keep seeing it until you can't see it anymore. And it's still selling out at every theater I live by.
People are getting depressed because they wish they could live on Pandora.
I know, it's crazy. But I went and saw it again, and this time I made a conscious decision to see it in not 3D.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, okay. In fact, I saw it the week Jeff was here in Utah. I went and saw it in not 3D. And the guy, and my goal was to say, all right, am I just buying into the gimmick? Is this, can this story still be just as affecting and powerful without this 3D effect? Will it even be maybe slightly less distracting without it? You know, these are all the questions that were going through my head because I'd never really done this comparison. So I went and saw it, and I have to say, let me say ahead of this, I agree with everything you just said. I think stuff's headed this way. I also think video games are heading that other way. I agree with the whole framing issue. You know, coming from an illustrator and cartoonist background, I totally get that concept. So I agree with the way this stuff is presented. And I think 3D doesn't take away from that. But I enjoyed the second viewing just a little bit more.
Mm.
And I think it's partially because 3D, even 3D that's handled well, where it's not constantly just poking you in the face to show you that it can, you know, Final Destination style or whatever.
Right. Look, my hand 3D is reaching out at you.
Chicks.
Yeah, I mean, an Avatar should be held up as a fine example of this moving forward. People, please do not make your movies poke us in the face every 5 minutes. Have it be more part of the milieu and the look and the place and add to it that way. And it did that in spades for me, but I felt like I wasn't really getting the texture of everything. I wasn't really getting the kind of the meat and potatoes of the experience, and I felt like I got that more the second viewing. Maybe I just need to be more acclimated to it.
I was going
to
say, did your eyes not have to work as hard? Because 3D isn't quite there as far as being relaxing on your eyes.
Yeah, and I'm one of those lamos that has to wear glasses under them, you know, so it's just ridiculous and you look like a fool and it's uncomfortable and it's all of those things and I'm blind as a bat without them, so I kind of have to. But, yeah, I kind of came away with it feeling a little bit downtrodden about it because I want this to be amazing and I think that, you know, now that digital's here, these glasses can do amazing things. You know, there's this whole format war between different glasses types. Like you have to have a certain kind if you go to IMAX or a certain kind if you go to a regular digital projection or if you see it in another place. They have these like three different competing standards. So like which glasses are going to win? And
totally.
I keep hearing about all that crap. But in the end, I think you're right and I hope you're right. But I just from my own personal experience, I kind of felt like Avatar stood as strong or maybe even stronger as a traditional flat experience. And I'm wondering, I know you've seen it maybe once or twice. I don't know how many times you've seen it, but how do you feel about that when you've seen a movie in 3D like Coraline or something and then maybe experience it later not in that way? Do you feel like it still holds up?
I have a couple things to say. One, I think that's a testament to James Cameron's storytelling. The way you coming away from it, loving it even more in 2D.
I agree.
Everything you just said – I saw Avatar twice, by the way. But everything I just said – everything you just said is exactly how I felt walking out of Up in 3D. And I felt like I would have so much preferred to see that in 2D. I felt the glasses made everything dim and the whole joy of the Pixar films are those lush colors. And I felt like, why does it need to be in 3D? I'm already immersed in the movie anyway. I don't need it to visually immersed. If I'm inside a movie, I'm inside a movie. But then Avatar changed that for me, and I think that I saw it twice. In one experience in 3D, I had a headache, and it was very. It also had a dimness to it, and it was jittery. It was when I saw it in the quote unquote LIMAX experience.
Oh, I hate those, but yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't have that problem the first time. And I think everything you're saying it could be true, but I think it's sort of like how our first generation of iPhones didn't have copy and paste, you know, and the first iPod, how, you know, that it didn't even have a click. It was before there was a click wheel was an improvement on what the first generation of the iPod was. And now we don't even have a click wheel. Like, I think that. That you're right, that there is those glasses do affect, you know, maybe we'll get contacts, you know, maybe, you know, well, television, we'll hopefully be getting a non-glasses 3D, which would be great. I don't think that's going to be possible for a long time with movies from what I'm reading with screens. I think I think the glasses will get better, and I think all that stuff will make it so like, I think your experience of the 2D was because you didn't have any inhibiting fat, like it wasn't there was a problem with the way 3D was used. It was the technology is not quite there yet. But it's so, like he did things in Avatar that, you know, he brightened. He knows that the glasses, you know, interfere with the the luminance, you know, so he increased the luminance with it, you know, which is something that they didn't do enough, which he realized to do with Avatar. So I think that they're recognizing this medium in a more legitimate way, and they're going through great lengths to make it standard, you know, and the experience to have.
All right, we need to bring our episode to a close here, but check us out next time for the long-term predictions from these guys, which, if the short-term predictions are any indication, is going to be pretty fascinating. Dan Trachtenberg, thank you very much. Where can people find you on the web?
Just go over to totallyradshow.com, where you can see our weekly movie geek, movie video game review show.
And Dave Broadbeck?
Probably the easiest thing is just go to twitter.com/dbroadbeck.
And, of course, you can find us at forecastpodcast.com or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. I'm twitter.com, some unpronounceable Twitter ID, so just go to twitter.com/TomMerritt to find out what that is. And, of course, you can find Scott at twitter.com/extralife. We will have Dan and Dave back next week for the long-term predictions. See you then.
Bye.
But it's only 32 years away.